Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast. It's me, your Casual Comics host, Joe. And today I've got Mark with me. Hey, Mark.
Hello, Joe.
2-1 base.
2-1 base. I still can't find it.
We're here today to talk about Wakanda Forever. Is it Black Panther : Wakanda Forever? Or is it just, I think the movie's just Wakanda Forever,
so.
Right?
I think so. I asked my kids over Thanksgiving if they wanted to watch Black Panther. And then I've already seen it. And I said, no, Wakanda Forever. Oh, okay. So I guess it's known to the kids as Wakanda Forever.
That's the lingo on the streets.
That's right.
For Wakanda Forever. So we saw Wakanda Forever. We're going to talk probably quite a bit about that. We also read some comics starring Namor, however you want to pronounce his name. Now it's got multiple pronunciations.
Joe.
Yes. For people who have seen it, we caught up on that. We'll just talk, we'll recap the plot and we'll just chat general Wakanda Forever, Namor, and whatever comes to mind from the Marvel Universe at the moment.
Let's talk about Wakanda Forever.
We'll talk about Wakanda Forever and ever. Usually this is where we talk about comic book news and stuff like that. The only comic book news you sent me was the Battle of the Bulge.
That was MCU news.
MCU news. The digital altering of the bathing suit area of the actor who played Namor.
I thought Battle of the Bulge.
So that's been a buzz on the webs, as they say. I don't know what else is like. I mean, we're coming up on the end of the year. It doesn't seem Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special is out. I have not watched that yet. Have you seen it?
I have not. Got it queued up.
Okay. Are you waiting till closer to Christmas?
Yes and no. Yeah, I think I wanted to wait until December to watch it. I think that's kind of the official start of Christmas music to me. So
I agree. They debuted it the day after Thanksgiving. Like, that's a little soon. Like, Disney's Prep and Landing was on the day after Thanksgiving. I'm like, it's just the day after Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving movies, and then there's Christmas movies. And I'm with you, Joe. Like, I don't want to watch a Christmas Story sequel on Thanksgiving weekend.
Right.
Like, you should watch it later. But that's when they debut them all, I guess, now, is all the Christmas over Thanksgiving.
I think so. Well, I mean, Hallmark Channel used to do the 21 or the 24 days, 25 days, however many days they did of Christmas movies, but they didn't start them until December 1st. That's when it starts.
Right. Yes, I think that should be the case. I mean, there's plenty of Thanksgiving movies out there, right?
I don't know. Are there?
Grumpy Old Men, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's a classic. I had not thought about
it. Right?
Planes, Trains, PT&A, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Anything else going on that we should talk about before we just dive right into the Wakanda Forever talk? There's reading anything good comics-wise?
No, I've still got the Amazing Fantasy Spider-Man that you gave me. I haven't read yet, so I've got to get on that. But no, I haven't read anything new or recent since you sent over a couple of Namor comics.
Namor title.
So I haven't. I think you're right. I think it's kind of the winding down of the year.
I think so. I think it's that time. So maybe we should just dive straight in to the
very pun intended
depths of Wakanda.
Let's do it.
So, like, I saw this movie. You saw it opening night, right?
I did.
Yeah. And I saw it probably a couple days later. I think I saw it on Saturday in the afternoon. What time of a show did you see?
It was the 7 o'clock. The big one.
7 o'clock opening night, sold out, packed theater,
MC crowd.
And what were kind of your expectations coming in, right? Because Chadwick Boseman passed away. Everybody I think who's a fan knows of that. And there were a lot of discussions going around. They were like, are they going to recast Black Panther? They have another character pick up the mantle of Black Panther. Like, there are a lot of ways that they discussed handling the franchise. What were you expecting?
Yeah, I went back and watched Black Panther.
Yeah.
First one. I don't know how to say it now. The Black Panther 1. I haven't watched it in probably over a year.
Mm-hmm.
Since my, part of other people's, I think, pandemic binging, I actually watched all the Marvel movies in timeline order, I guess. not release order, but anyway.
Okay.
But I watched it a couple months ago as the trailers are coming out, and I really it's I think still a top seven Marvel movie for me.
Yeah.
And then B, as you were saying, I was trying to figure out the big expectations were. I gotta think that because Coogler is doing it again, they're gonna give the proper tribute to Chadwick Boseman. Mm-hmm. So I was just more curious as to how they were gonna do it, but I knew they were gonna do it well. Was my expectation. Right. And then watching the first movie and then going into this one, my expectations were, how are they going to figure out what Black Panther is going to be? Because they burned all the flowers or whatever that right. make Black Panther, Black Panther. So I was just wondering how they were going to do that. And was it going to, you know, meet my expectation? And then third, what was the legacy of Black Panther going to be?
Right.
And are they going to, not cheaping out, but are they going to just have Shuri be it, and that was it, which is what everybody was expecting? Or is there going to be something more to it? Right. And then the Namor, like from what we knew about him, and we'll talk about him in some comics later, Joe, because you and I've grown up watching him. I mean, he is the anti-hero. He is, you know, Marvel's answer for he has a really good reason to do what he does, but he just does it brutally and violently. And are they actually going to show him as that? Is that going to be like, what are my expectations for the depiction? And I was like, I don't know what Marvel's going to do with him.
Right.
And so I was just curious going in, really. I didn't have a lot of expectations other than, I guess that is a lot right there. But what about you? What were your expectations?
I'm with you. I kind of like, I was curious because, you know, all the heart-shaped herb was gone. You kind of knew that they were going to have Black Panther be a hero. And it felt like you were going to have somebody else pick up the mantle at some point. And Shuri seemed like the logical, but I couldn't see I wanted to know, how do you get there? Because like, she seemed very happy-go-lucky in the first movie. So she's joking around. She's creating all of this stuff. It seems like natural and Shuri, you know, no surprises, Black Panther in the comics at times. But I'm like, how do you go from what is seemingly a relatively lighthearted character to somebody who is going to have a heavy burden placed on them if they are Black Panther? And if it's not her, I mean, literally Black Panther could be anybody. It doesn't have to be. So where does that leave all of everything and all of like Wakanda? And they hinted, you know, the trailers were not shy about showing the funeral procession of T'Challa. So I was like, what is the tone of this movie going to be? And then with Namor, it's never been like one of my favorite characters because he's like kind of a giant jerk,
right,
all the time.
Yeah.
And more, I was like, how dumb is it going to look when he's got those little tiny flapping wings on his ankles that he's flying around on? Because that never made any sense to me. I'm like, those wings can't support a full person's body. Come on. But I was interested to see how they would pull it off, because I know Marvel's done a good job of taking and mining from characters' histories and bringing it forward. And you saw it at Alamo Drafthouse, right?
I did, yeah.
I thought it was really great because we were there for the pre-show, they did have a good 10-minute prelude, which was one of the writers who's written some of the comic books, talking about the history of Black Panther and all they drew into it. So that got me even more excited for the movie. And then the movie kind of starts. And what was the like energy of the crowd that you were with there?
It was, I think, the same main expectation was, how are they going to tribute and treat him dying? Are they going to talk about him dying? Or are they just going to move on? And like you said, right out of the cold open,
right?
It was, he was on his deathbed.
Right.
And Shuri was trying to save him. So they like immediately had the stakes be that high. And that was when the crowd was still kind of, you know, being festive. And right. Then that cold open came on and it was just deathly silent.
Yeah.
So everybody was just like, oh, here it comes. Like they're going to do the death right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So it just got quiet. And then leading up to him dying, spoiler mm-hmm. alert. You had a lot of sniffles and people crying. You could hear them in the audience.
Yeah.
Because it just brought all that back of how he was a great actor. And you know, you found out after the fact he was battling cancer and was in a lot of pain during Infinity War and Endgame.
Mm-hmm.
He still just wanted, he didn't want anybody to know, and nobody really knew outside of like, we didn't know.
Right.
Until after the fact, you find all this out, and then when they just addressed it right out of the gate, you were just like, oh, so it's gonna be this kind of a movie.
Right. Right.
And it was just, yeah, and I got a little choked up, actually a lot choked up. And I thought it was a great opening. And you know, the funeral scene was moving, and yeah, just not a dry eye in the theater.
Yeah, it was amazing to me because, like you said, it's, you know, going into a Marvel movie, it's a little festive, you know, feeling, and it's like a splash of cold water, like in your face, like right yeah. off. It's like middle of the crisis. And I am so glad that they made the choice to not try and digitize him in any way or yep. show him. All you hear is, and Shuri is scrambling through the lab, and it's what I hinted at when we talked about before. It's like, it's kind of like, how does Shuri as a character evolve? And she is immediately like moment one in the middle of the biggest crisis of her life. And you get to see her experience probably the hardest moment of her life right out of the gate. And she can't fix it. She's a genius and she's been able to fix everything her whole life. Mm-hmm. And she's working with the computer and she's working with the synthetic stuff like that. And she just can't fix it. And the fact that like she's in the lab and then basically is told by the AI that his heartbeat has stopped, and then her mother comes in and she was not at his side at his deathbed. Right. You could see he just killed her. Not only did she not fix it, but she wasn't even there with him when he passed.
Because she was obsessed with fixing it.
Right.
And so it consumed her. And that was the whole theme throughout the movie that played through, was just this dark side. And I guess the other thing I was thinking about, Joe, was how when you said a splash of cold water, I mean, you and I both thought Thor: Love and Thunder was okay.
Yeah.
But just such a contrast to the last Marvel movie. I mean, that was fun and whimsical and a little too fantastical for my taste. And, you know, they kind of, you know, we don't have to rehash it, but they didn't really, like, Christian Bale's character was awesome, but the movie itself was just okay. But just compare that to this, right. I think just even people were like, what were we going to get? But like I said, I watched the first Black Panther and a lot of the same tones, a lot of the same themes. I mean, his dad died, right? So this was the whole him taking over and all the tribal feuds with that went with it. So I was taken aback, but only just because of recency bias to watching Thor. But when I compared it to the Black Panther one, I was thinking, well, this is the Black Panther movies.
Right. And I wonder how much of that would have seeped in had you know, what happened with Chadwick Boseman's passing that happened, of how much that colored this movie. But you're right. Yeah. I mean, the Black Panther, the prior movie was dealing a lot with death. And I think that the death of, you know, the actor forced them to deal with more in this movie. So it was fascinating. And then you know, you're there for the funeral, and everybody, it felt like in the movie theater, was experiencing it as a funeral.
Yeah.
And then the Marvel logo comes up.
And oh man. Yeah.
Just silent, no fanfare, no nothing.
And all Chadwick Boseman montages in the logo, just him.
I could hear people crying in the theater. Yeah. I was one of them. I mean,
it was crazy. It was really moving. It was a great, you know, well done by them for doing that.
Right. Right. So let's take a little break here. Let me clear my throat, dry my eyes.
That's right.
And we'll jump in a little bit to the plot of the film and see where that takes us. So we'll take a quick break and be right back.
Oh, my stars and garters. You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
All right, everybody. Thanks for coming back with us as we discuss Wakanda Forever. We just finished talking about the, you know, sort of the setup and getting into the plot of the film and just sort of the overarching bigger setup of what's happening. It's, you referenced it, and I thought of it too at one point. Is like, we are in our podcast where we talked about Thor: Love and Thunder, what we said is no stakes. They're like, it didn't feel like there are any real stakes. And this movie drops you in, not only with the death of the main title character from the prior movie, but you've immediately got stakes of entirely global consequences for an entire nation and one of the most powerful nations on earth that can then upset the balance of power for the entire globe. And that are stakes that you can like get into right away. So when you start out, I thought it was really great to see the UN, right, with Queen Ramonda there.
Yeah.
And man, Angela Bassett owned the screen, man.
She did a great job.
She was powerful. And so you've got Wakanda, where Wakanda is, right? And people, they've opened their borders. They've now got outposts, outreach stations all over, which is kind of cool. But as you would expect for the entire globe, there's one nation that's got vibranium. The rest of them don't. Everybody's a little edgy about Wakanda and their power.
What's going to happen? Because their main leader is dead.
Right.
Their protector is dead. And so they think they're a little vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
When they have the most powerful resource that they own. And at that point, you realize, you think it's the only place the only you can get it.
Source of vibranium. That's what they told us in the first movie.
Right.
No one else has found it. It's all there in Wakanda.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
that's the whole beginning of the stakes, like you said, out of the global scale.
That action sequence from the jump is pretty cool. I did not expect the Dora Milaje to show up quickly.
I didn't either.
But
badass.
They've got the, you know, everybody's like, hey, you gotta share your vibranium, whatever. And they're out there and somebody's trying to steal the vibranium. And the Wakandans, it's exactly what she says then. She's like, we're not as weak as you imagine, simply because our leader is gone. And they march them straight in there. That was like the sickest burn. They just march. They're like, here's your dudes.
Yeah, you can have them back next time. We won't be so merciful. And and it's a good reminder of diplomacy matters. Like, you have to, even Wakanda, while they could dominate these other nations, you still have to play like a delicate game,
right?
Hey, we still need to work with these folks. I mean, because I keep referencing this, but in the first movie, they opened their doors to other nations. Like, that was the whole point. It was that Chadwick Boseman wanted to do is he wanted to share the power and the learnings with the world. And when he did that, they just wanted more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this kind of showed you. That it's never enough. You know, people always want more power. They want more everything. And it's kind of showing that the bad outcome of what you think is a good intention, which is, well, we want to share our knowledge. And it just became a reminder to these other nations, like, they're jealous and they're afraid.
Yeah.
And so what do you do when you're afraid and you're jealous? You do things like sending in dudes to go steal vibranium.
My dudes are in your base.
Where they got their butt kicked.
They did. And then the inciting incident too is now everybody's like looking everywhere for vibranium. And they're like, hey, wait, maybe there's some in the ocean. And there is vibranium in the ocean. But like, this is where Atlantis comes in. It's like, hey, and I thought that was a really cool introduction. It's like they find this vibranium detecting machine under the ocean, and that crew gets wiped out. And everybody immediately thinks the Wakandans are behind all of this.
Right.
Because why wouldn't they be? They're the ones who know about vibranium and have vibranium.
Right.
And like I said, it's totally opposite of Thor Love and Thunder, because now you've got a real escalation, which is there is another global power that no one knows about. Just like no one knew about Wakanda until the last movie. And it's Atlantis. And they have vibranium also. And they also have Namor.
And what is the name? Because they don't call it Atlantis in the movie. I think they either didn't have the rights to it or they changed the name of it.
They have another name, and I think it's and I'm really sort of glad they did it, right? They changed it to be more of a Mayan thing. So it wouldn't be Atlantis, because it's not the traditional Atlantis, but it is Namor's kingdom under the ocean that, you know, it goes back to that whole hey, here's another group of people that were being oppressed. And their escape was they got under the ocean. And then they've built up, and they've been remaining in secret, hidden, because they know how crappy the surface world can be.
Right.
Did you find the name of the?
I've got the underwater city is Talokan.
Talokan, that's right.
Talokan. But what was the? I don't remember the name of the actual. Was that the city? But was there a?
I think that was how they referred to it. Was Talokan.
Yeah, which I'm with you. I was underwater kingdom of Talokan. Yes. So that's
And they tweak that origin, I think, in a really great way. But they set up the plot here in a really cool in a really cool moment where it's like the rest of the world suspects it's Wakanda. Wakanda, I mean, man, it gave me shivers when Namor showed up on the beach, where Shuri is still trying to get over the death of her brother and won't give it up.
Well, the mom, so you're right. So the mom takes Shuri out basically unprotected and is like, we have to let him go. And you take your funeral garb and you burn it. Like, that's the way to do it. And that's when you first realize it's the dark side, if you will, is starting to consume her, because she's like, I wasn't even on his bedside. I couldn't save him. And I'm just so angry at everything. And anger was consuming her right then. She's like, I can't let him go yet. Like, I'm not ready.
Right. It's been a year.
And then you're kind of processing that in your mind. Then all of a sudden Namor shows up.
Right.
And you're like, whoa, I didn't expect that.
Well, and it's another almost immediate, because it got in my head right away, which is like the entire world is afraid of Wakanda because Wakanda has and doesn't know them. And now and they've been the biggest, baddest on the block forever. And now there's somebody possibly more advanced, more challenging them, because they all live underwater, but they can get up onto the surface world. They're stronger, they're tougher, and they have vibranium. They might not be the baddest country in the world anymore. And that, I think, creates fear for them. And almost the way the rest of the world reacts to Wakanda is now reacting to Talokan the same way because of fear. And and like Namor's just like, basically, listen, it's because of you all deciding to show yourself to the world that now the world's looking for vibranium, and now they're about to find us. So take care of this mess, because they just want to be left alone, which is,
and don't tell anybody about us, otherwise we're going to come back in force.
Right. And it's like probably the first external threat they've had to fear in their entire history as a nation. So,
and that's when they learn, I think, from him that people had a vibranium metal detector,
right?
And we're going around. They're like, they didn't even know that was
yeah
thing.
And he's like, it's right there behind you.
That's right. He's like, I killed the people that were looking for it, and I brought the machine.
Here they're like, when did that get there? Like the way they introduce him, they realize all of a sudden he was able to not only penetrate their whole thing, but take out this crew and get that giant machine that wasn't there 5 seconds ago behind him without anybody knowing.
And that's when you also realize that they, like you said, they fear them because they knew that they didn't need a Black Panther against the other nations, but they're like, oh shoot, we need a Black Panther against this guy.
Right. And they don't have like, the heart-shaped herb anymore.
They don't have the heart-shaped herb anymore. So they're like, we're kind of screwed. Like, what do we do? And so they do what you normally would do. You got to find out who made this machine and learn more about that, because that set this guy off. So,
And the solution is
like, find who did this and bring them to me so I can kill them.
Right.
Like, that's
the solution seems simple. It's like, I guess we better do that then.
Yeah, I guess we should.
Slight wrinkle in the plan. The person you're looking for is a college student.
Is a 19-year-old Reed Richards wannabe.
Right. Riri Williams. How much did you know about Riri before the movie?
Just a little bit. I mean, I didn't read up into the Ironheart upcoming series, but I just knew her from some crossover events when I was reading Marvel Comics. You and I would always debate. Remember, we'd always for fun look up who are the top five smartest people in the MCU.
Right. We'd always like, Cho, number 7.
Yeah. And we're like, who's Riri Williams? Like, she would always be way up there. And
yeah,
that's how I remember her. Like, she was always either a top 3 or 4. So like, we're talking Tony Stark, Reed Richards level. Well, for MCU listeners, like, you're talking about, she's probably, I think, in the rankings smarter than Tony Stark.
I think
I remember.
She's right up there
on the MCU, but you can
see in the movie, she's basically recreated all of his armor without the benefit of all of his super AI and lab and all of that stuff.
Right.
Am I remembering it right that she's got like diagrams of Stark stuff up on the wall?
She does. And and what I love about it is the parallels. I mean, I think that's what they're trying to do with her, is just create a character that's already in the MCU. And they're like, we need this kind of genius person that it also wants to have fun. I mean, she's, you know, like Stark, she works on old cars too.
Right.
And loves classic cars and all that. So there's a lot of parallels there.
At some point, we'll have to maybe check a couple of her comics. I feel like, knowing it from, you know, tangents and seeing her in other books I've read, I feel like they've aged her up in the movie. I think she was supposed to be a high schooler in the comics when she was introduced.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I feel like her first initial prototype armor was because she hacked into Stark Industries and stole, actually, which was the nod of it being on the wall there, was she actually like hacked in and stole and built her own armor.
Yeah, which is why she, when she saw the feds, like she immediately burned all those things right away. She's like, I can't have anybody. And she probably has a photographic memory, so she's probably okay with that. But
yeah, I really liked her character. They did a really good job of making her feel real, like a real college student who's got, am I remembering it right too, that she's like writing term papers for people for money on the side.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it later. I think, and they, it would have probably looked like a money grab, but I really think this could have been two movies because I think her character specifically transformed too fast when you get to the very end of the war and she's like, yippee, like zipping around. It's like, well, you're kind of in a light, you went from college student to life or death situation. And you're handling it really well. Now, granted, she's a genius.
Right.
But
you don't get to see her like you got to see Tony Stark experimenting, not really knowing what you're doing at first.
Right.
Like you don't just strap on the armor and fly in and fight dudes without having some practice.
Right. Yeah. It just didn't really, that part of it was accelerated, I felt. And her reaction towards it. But I get what they were trying to do. It's just, it seemed a little too much. It was a match to the character in the comics.
Yeah.
But if you didn't know that, then it would be like, I was talking to my brother-in-law about this, and that was one thing. I'm like, well, that's Riri Williams in the comics. And he's like, oh, okay, then that's fine.
Right.
But he didn't know that.
Right. So they go to grab her, and they, who is it? Is her name Okoye? Goes with
Okoye Shuri. Begs because she doesn't want her to go, meaning Shuri,
right?
The mom, and she begs her, I'll protect her, it'll be fine. And you knew that was, it's like that inhibitor chip, Joe. You're like, that's going to be destroyed in the first 5 minutes of the movie.
That's Spider-Man not going to go so hot.
So you kind of knew something was going to happen, but you didn't really know how or what. And you're like, is it going to be the feds? Like, what's going to happen? And then they escape or seemingly escape. And then there's Namor's henchmen.
Right. Atuma and Namora. Atuma,
which is like, to your point around Namor, he's like my least favorite character in the comics.
Right.
He's always so lame. I don't know why. I just hated him.
He's got a shark's head on. He's got a shark's head on his head.
On his head. What's that? It just seemed dumb. But he was well played in the MCU, though.
Yeah.
Like, it was great. Just this, you know, pure warrior, you know, die with honor kind of guy. And it was good. It's just, I never liked him in the comics, but they did a good job of portraying him in the movie.
Yeah. So you get a lot. I mean, you're right. There is a lot to this movie. It could have been broken into two movies, but so then you get Namor abducting Shuri. And I'm sure I was in my mind, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad they avoided the cliche, because that could have easily, like 20 years ago, that would have turned into the, now you're going to marry me and our kingdoms will be united.
It's funny you said that, because I was wondering about that. I'm like, I think there were some nods there, but I was like, oh my God, is he going to fall in love with somebody? Like, is that what's going to happen here?
Right.
And they didn't do that, which if you read the comics, you'd know what we're talking about, where he obsesses over Sue Storm and pretty much every female MCU character.
Right.
I'm not going to do this again. Don't let me fall for you.
Not one more time. I did think that gets you into the underwater, like the introduction of Talokan, which, you know, I got to admit, I've never been like an underwater kingdom, an underwater kingdom kind of like anytime I'm reading Aquaman or anything with a submarine, like underwater kingdoms just like don't do it for me, because you can't talk underwater for real.
Right.
And maybe in, you know, once in a while they'll try and explain it that it's like telepathy and they're not really talking.
Or high-pitched talking.
Yeah. But I thought they did really well, because the thing, like if you watch the movie Aquaman, which I got a lot of problems with the DC movies, but just the way they dress when they're underwater, I'm like, it's flowing robes. You're not like getting around very well underwater. You're just, it's not good. Wear appropriate clothing for being underwater. And they did. They did a really good job of that with the Atlante, with Talokan.
The other reason why they called it Talokan, Joe, is because at Atlantis, they didn't want to confuse people with the DC universe, because it was called Atlantis. I mean, that's where Aquaman and his mom and stuff are from. So that was another reason why they changed it. I thought that was a brilliant move by them.
It was. But I like, yeah. I like the fact that as an Emerald movie, but like, there's no chit chat. They're not talking. They've got this hand symbol of respect when he goes by. So they use a lot of hand and a lot of, and it got me around this whole, like people just, hey, how's it going when you're underwater? It's like, you can't converse that way.
Right.
So I thought they did a really good job with the world building there. So let's pause there. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk about the second half of what could have been two movies. And then talk about after that, the comics we read. And what we think is coming up next for Wakanda and Telecon.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. You wouldn't like us when we're angry.
Still with me, Mark?
I'm with you. Forever.
Underwater.
Like Madison from Splash.
Yeah. There were no mermaids in this movie. That's probably for the best. But. Yeah, there's a lot of plot in there. I think you know. So obviously they're going to get away. Nakia shows up, which is interesting to me because she hasn't been part. She didn't show up at his funeral. They don't explain why.
Right.
In the movie at first.
And she's Black Panther's girlfriend.
Right. From the prior movie.
From the prior movie, yeah.
But she's living in a Wakandan outreach somewhere, teaching kids. They enlist her.
And Haiti. You know,
they're in and out of trouble. But I think the high points are really some of the political intrigue that comes through. Ross is helping them out, right? They find out Martin Freeman.
Yep.
He's helping them out. And he's connected to Valentina Allegra de Fontaine. It's like, what?
That's right.
Did you get in the movie? She is ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, and boss?
Ex-wife, yeah.
Ex-wife.
And current boss.
And current boss. That can't be fun.
No. Which, she's just great. Like, put more her on screen. She's amazing.
I agree.
Julie Louis-Dreyfus. Like, she is just fantastic.
Right. So, overall, though, it did get, the movie got a little bit much for me in some parts of the giant.
They're just out of Thanksgiving. There's like too much stuffing in that turkey,
right? because I was really super into the intrigue of the nations and the political stuff. When Shuri gets back, you know, they come up with this. They hatch this plan to lure. I didn't understand why the plan was. Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go out on the ocean where we're surrounded by water. And we're going to get him to come out here and fight us. I was like, why on the ocean, on that big ship? They were very well prepared. They had the sonic blasters to be able to blast the Atlantean. But overall, they're pretty much, we're not going to turn over this girl to you. The vibranium thing isn't going to happen. And I guess we're going to have to fight. And there wasn't, well, I guess I skipped the part where the Atlanteans come and bring war to Wakanda, right?
That's right.
And there's another moment there.
Part of that. They come in. And because they're like, if you're not going to hand her over, we're going to come over and not be reasonable. And
right. They're the whole, you have 24 hours. And just to show you were serious, you have 12 hours.
That's right. So they do. They attack with all their forces and they're, of course, unprepared. And then kind of the whole apex of that moment is where he's like, I'm going to basically tear apart your family and what's left, and he ends up drowning Shiri's mom,
right?
Angela Bassett, Queen. I can't remember that
Queen Ramonda,
yeah.
And she dies saving.
She dies saving Riri. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that's a big. I was a little surprised they did that, but I'm like, that was kind of the whole. It's just gonna the underplot of Shiri going further and further consumed by anger. I mean, that was just another thing, big thing they took away from her. And so she had every right to kind of be more like Namor, because the plot of him is you have these white colonists, because that's the Mesopotamian background. I think Talakan is also a Meso era name. Mm-hmm. But they basically kill his family. And so he's like, you can't trust anybody from the land ever. And that's a Namor thing, as you know, a very normal MCU comic tie-in. And he's like, you have to be consumed by this. And so her mom dying is just another horrible thing in her life of everybody. Her parents have been murdered,
right?
In the MCU, and her brother died of a mysterious disease. And
yeah, you thought T'Challa had it bad in the prior movie with losing his dad, yeah.
Right.
And such, But man, she's losing everybody. She loses her brother. She loses her mom. And yeah, she gets really consumed with anger. And she's like, we're going to take the fight to them. And I got a way to kill this dude. And
yeah, that, so and it's, she synthesizes the heart-shaped flower or fruit. Yep.
She finally figures it out, gets the powers of the Black Panther bestowed upon her.
And then there's the cameo, which I kind of liked, because it's like, who is she going to see?
Yeah.
And I thought for sure for a second, not for sure, I thought for a second they were going to do what you and I didn't want, which is, are they going to do a CGI Chadwick Boseman?
Right.
And you turn around and it's Killmonger.
It was really smart choice, because it surprised me.
It did surprise me too. I was not expecting. I'm like, is she going to see her dad?
Well, because you think you know your ancestral plane, but it's not super like, I don't know. It's not top of mind that he actually is a blood relation to her when you go into the movie, and she's at the same place he is. It's like, see, this is what happens. You got to take care of business.
That's right. And he's like, you surprised to see me, cuz?
And she's not super happy that that's who she saw, and she's not telling anybody.
Yeah, because she's afraid of becoming that person. But she's like, but I'm kind of embracing it.
Yeah.
And so that's the conflict. That's the thread that actually keeps this movie, I think, pacing along. And you're interested in her, even though I believe there's way too much other things going on. But that kept it connected.
Yeah. I liked it. And then
so that was good. So that was, yeah, you skipped over that because I mean, we have a lot to talk about, but that was the, a big pivot point of what's she going to do? Is she going to fall further into darkness, or is she going to save herself from herself? And Killmonger's like, no, you need to take care of biznatch.
Right.
Kill them all. I say,
you got to do it. And then, and her and Riri come up with the way to defeat Namor once and for all.
Sonic boom.
You gotta dry him out.
Gotta dry him out.
You gotta towel him off good.
Gotta smoke him out. Dry him out like a smoked turkey. So they build a microwave oven inside the Quinjet.
They're just gonna dry him out. Man, that was an intense battle scene between the two of them. It was much more,
it was good.
Intense than I think.
Brutal.
I'm not as much into the spectacle as I used to. Like, the two armies battling each other on the ocean was a cool spectacle, but it didn't carry to me the gravity of just her fighting Namor, and they're both like fighting to their last breath.
Yeah.
And they both are like, just hate each other at this point.
Right.
Like,
but they hate not so much other, but what each other is allegedly standing for.
Right.
She's fighting herself,
right,
in Namor, because she's like, I don't want to be you, but do I have to be you to beat you? And he just hates the fact that she is protecting non-Wakandans. Like, he just can't stand that. And so they're really fighting their beliefs, like, for their beliefs, which is, you know, a very kind of religious type thing, if you think about it, which I'm with you. Like, that, I mean, ever since Lord of the Rings, when Peter Jackson just brilliantly did those big battles, people kept copying it. And then, like you said, over time, it just kind of got a little, that's okay. But that one-on-one battle, yeah, that was, we'll talk about top three moments before, but I was really into it. Like, when she ripped off one of his wings, his feet wings.
Yeah, take that.
Like, ooh, she's really going to kill him. Like, I really thought for a minute, like, he was going to die. I'm like, they're not going to kill him, right? Right? Are they?
Do that.
Dry him out. Smoke him out.
There were, and that was what I liked about this movie, is there were many points where I was like, man, if these two people could just sit down and talk to each other.
Right.
Because they're not that far apart. Or if they could just understand each other. But I think that was what was really great. And that's the thread they pulled through from Namor, is that, like, he's arrogant, but he also just has this, I'm not going to, and I'm not going to be reasonable, because I don't have to be, because they present him with a certainly valid alternative, is, we have this girl. She will live here in Wakanda. She will not interact with the outside world anymore. She won't help them. She'll just live here with us, and we'll make sure that nothing happens. And he's like, not good enough. Nope. And it's like, I don't know whether it's because he doesn't trust them that they'll be able to do that, or that they'll be willing to do that. But, like, other than just the guy is stubborn. He's like, no, I just need to be sure, and I can't be sure unless she's dead.
Man. Yeah. And this all stems from the fact that his land and his I don't know if it was his mom or dad. It's a little fuzzy on it. I just don't pick up on that as much, mainly because I didn't have that bad of a background. But but basically he's like, you can't trust landlubbers.
Right.
He's like, I learned that at an early age. You cannot trust them. They always want more, which is the beginning of the movie. Like, they just are never going to stop, and she's not going to be any different. And somebody that smart is definitely not going to be any different.
Yeah.
So he's just consumed by, he's already given up. He's like, diplomacy is dead. Like, this, it's
us versus them.
I don't even know. It's like, diplomacy is never an option for him. Never.
Yeah. I guess that's, but he was trying to be diplomatic with Shuri, because he's like, you need to see the world the way I do.
Yeah.
And that's partly why he kills his mom or her mom.
Right.
Because he's like, see, like, I will kill people that you love. Like, why are you doing this?
Right.
And so that's, so in a way, in a weird way, he is trying to be diplomatic, because he wants, between the two of them, which is, they can be the most powerful.
Marry me
in the world. Yeah, that was kind of the theme. That wasn't the theme, right?
He didn't really, it was,
her. He was just more enamored with her, like, you're the Black Panther now,
right?
Like, let's rule the world together. It's kind of like a Luke Skywalker Darth Vader type
situation. Well, and not to fast forward, but I mean, that's the coda to the movie, right? So no surprise, she doesn't kill him, she gets him to agree.
Do you think he was going to die at all?
Surrender, Joe? Or I didn't, because I felt like they had just introduced it. And more is, I felt like they had just introduced a very interesting new dynamic, which is a new world power being Talokan. And you can't discard that easily and say, you gotta continue that thread. And it's easier to continue if he's alive. So I didn't think I also didn't think Shuri was going to kill him, because I didn't think that was where the movie was going to go. I think they showed by bringing in Killmonger how toxic that can be, of that type. And it was part of her character's journey to reject. Like, it was set up from the beginning. She was in a very dark place, and her character journey kind of had to go to a rejection of the dark.
Yeah.
So that was her redemption moment, where she gets him to submit. Yep. And
yeah, yield or whatever. Yeah. And I just thought it was just a fleeting thought for me. I'm like, wow, she might actually kill him.
It was well done in that, like, emotionally, like, intellectually, I would have said, no, it's not going to happen, but you really believed it could.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you get to, and so it resolves, the two nations are at peace now, Riri's fine. And then the coda is, them telling him in Talokan, they're like, we couldn't stand to see this. And he's like, but now they under, he's like, the rest of the world is going to come for them. And when the rest of the world comes for them, they will know that they have an ally in us, and then we'll be together. Like, he could ploy a little bit more of a long game, because his goal wasn't to destroy Wakanda necessarily, but he knows that if there's a war against all of the rest of everybody on the land, he needs an ally, and Wakanda's probably the ally you want on your side.
Yep. Yeah.
So he has set up himself diplomatically in a decent place, even though he might not have set out to do, but it did feel like from the beginning, he didn't want to destroy Wakanda. He's like, you're like us. You screwed up by revealing yourself to everybody else. Now they're coming after you. I don't want them doing to me what they're doing to you already. So fix it.
Right.
If you can't fix it, and we got to go to war, let's be at war together.
Yep. Yep. And then just to kind of, well, we got to get to the ending first, but they do introduce the idea of, like, I think mutant is uttered for the first time in the MCU in that movie.
Yes.
If I remember correctly. So they're kind of like, why is he not blue like everybody else? Why does he fly?
Yes.
And so he says mutant. So there's that first geeky tie-in of, hey, they bought Fox. Now they can say mutant instead of enhanced.
Now mutants, or what were the Quicksilver and Wanda called?
Enhanced.
They called them enhanced.
Yeah.
Didn't they call them something else too? They were like
altered human.
I don't know.
No, they said enhanced. We got an enhanced on the field. That's what he said.
Ah, yeah. So, well, there you go. And that's like Black Panther. But yeah, first mutant mentioned, which is like controversial, I guess. People hate the idea of Namor being a mutant. And they have for a long time. I didn't realize he was one until I heard all the nerdy podcasts I listen to, where people are like, I hate that he's a mutant, because he is clearly in the comic books. And
yeah,
it's the podcasts I listen to are the ones that are about the comic books, not the movies. And people are like, stop with it. They've made him a mutant and not a mutant so many times in the comics. Stop. He's not a mutant. Like, he is. Let it go. Yeah. He is a mutant. Yeah. Reference X-Men number 6.
That's right.
So what? Go ahead and finish up the story, because there's a great mid-credits scene.
Yeah.
No end credit scenes, by the way, for this one.
No end credit scenes, but mid-credit scenes. Two of my favorite moments. So I'm going to skip ahead. I'm going to tell you some of my favorite moments.
Yeah,
one of my favorite moments is there at the end.
Yep.
And it is not the mid-credit sequence. I love M'Baku as a character, and I love the fact that Shuri is Black Panther. She's out visiting Nakia or whatever, and she is chosen to not be there for the trial for who will be the ruler of Wakanda. And M'Baku's like, let's do this.
Right.
And I certainly hope that is just a fast forward, you have to see anything. The next time we see Wakanda, M'Baku will be king of Wakanda. I would love that to be the case. I just love the fact that he showed up to challenge for it and Shuri wasn't even there. That's great.
I know.
Because it's so true to both of their characters. She never wanted to rule Wakanda. She didn't really want to be Black Panther in the first place.
Yes.
And so she's leaving in the capable hands of somebody who's proven to be a great leader.
Yes.
And, now he wanted to be ruler of Wakanda, which is why he challenged T'Challa in the first place.
Yep. I like that arc for his character. He always came to its aid. I mean, when you look at Infinity War and him helping there, you look at the first movie and how he helped, and the second movie and how he helped, and you're like, he's finally getting rewarded for doing the right thing for his people, not just his tribe, but for the whole people. And that was a great story for him. So I agree, that was a top moment. What were your other top moments?
Well, let's finish this and then we'll come back. We'll wrap Black Panther. But mid-credit scene we haven't talked about yet. Reveal of Nakia talking to
T'Challa.
T'Challa. Well, that's not my real name. T'Challa. I'm named after my father, Prince T'Challa.
Yes.
Black Panther has an heir.
That's right. And I loved it. I liked it too.
And he looked like he was, 8 years old?
Yeah.
And which is then, I think that's the explanation, right, for why Nakia wasn't at T'Challa's funeral. He didn't want his son being around Wakanda. And probably definitely didn't want his son to be there for his funeral and such. So that was mystery solved of why she didn't show up for any of that. And it would make sense, because I think the last Black Panther movie took place before the snap, right?
And yes, it did.
So we're 5 years past the snap. And so
he didn't get snapped. So he aged.
Right.
So he was like 8 instead of 3 or whatever.
Right. I liked it. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about the two comics we read, which were Uncanny X-Men number 6 from 1960.
Wait, are we coming back? Are we going to say our top movie story? Okay.
Then we'll wrap the whole Wakanda Forever podcast with what's coming next in the movies. So let's take a quick break. We'll review the comics real quick. And then after we talk about the comics we read, because we read some comics about Namor, we'll talk about favorite movie moments and we'll talk about what's next for the MCU. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. We love you 3000.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast. We're going to call an audible here and change the order of what we just said we were going to do. We will finish up our discussion of the Black Panther, the movie, Wakanda Forever. So to those of you who don't care to listen to the comic book nonsense that is to follow, because there is some nonsense in one of the comic books, can go on your merry way, but we hope you'll stick with us because we read some comics about Namor, should you be interested in that character anymore. But we were going to wrap Wakanda Forever, which you wanted to go through your top moments, Mark, right? So what were your...
Yeah.
I gave you one of mine. Mine was M'Baku challenging for the throne against what seemed to be no challengers to him.
Right.
We don't know for sure.
You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. So mine were just moments. I mean, the overall movie, I liked it. I think it's, the top half of all the Marvel movies, 30 now or something crazy like that.
Who would have thought?
So I think it's in the top half. Any interaction between Val or Julie Dreyfus and Martin Freeman.
Morgan Freeman would have been different. That would have been cool.
Like, though, that banter back and forth was just gold.
It was.
That was a good moment. And then the singing Talokan that would hypnotize people and have them walk off.
Oh,
in the water. I thought that was great.
The siren.
Like a whole mermaid nod. Oh, I was like, oh my gosh. So that scene when they're on the ship, that was the scene where they were searching for the stuff. And then all those people were just walking off and in a trance. I thought that was, and then they did it again during the
battle with the Wakanda
battle. So anyway, those were just a couple of the notable moments that I liked, that I thought were interesting. And then of course the reveal of Killmonger.
That was awesome.
I was like, that's really cool that he came back for that. I didn't hear anything about that.
I always like the one-on-one stuff more than the stuff. Anytime I can see Okoye in action is pretty great. So I liked the car chase scene there, because she's always got such an interesting car chase when she jams her spear through the back of the car. That was pretty awesome.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, she's a true warrior, and that was a good. Again, it's stuffed so much in there. Like, we could have talked about that for 10 minutes,
because she gets stripped of her title of Dora Milaje. Stripped of her
title, and
she doesn't return, right? She goes and she fights, but she doesn't become one of the Dora Milaje again, right?
No, I don't think she does again. I think she basically goes with the rogue Chadwick Boseman's ex, and they kind of agree to go do stuff together. But yeah, you're right. That's a whole nother. That's why I just thought Ryan Coogler was just asked to do too much in this movie, and to pull it off the way he did. I mean, it was just well done, because there was a lot in there. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't talk a lot about Riri Williams, who's going to be an important character in the MCU coming up. And a lot of her moments were really great. Like I said, just her and more than some of the moments, like there's movies that you'll see that are like, there's a cool, interesting moment because it's visually, or it's a, oh man, did you see that fight or whatever? This to me was more about the character moments. And it was like the things that stick with me, you know, are like the fireside chat where she can't burn her funeral robes and just those moments that illuminate who these characters are in a different way. I think that's what sticks with me on these.
Yeah. And all the actors that the characters you're referencing did amazing.
They
did a really, really good job.
I think we referenced a lot of my favorite moments earlier, like when they march in the French soldiers into the UN. Just
there were some good moments in the movie. So yeah, it was well done.
So what's like sort of permanently changed in the MCU now, right? You've got Wakanda and Atlantis as global powers. People still don't know about Talokan, just the Atlanteans.
But I think, remember on the bridge scene, I mean, they're definitely, they know there's another player on the board. I mean,
right. She hinted as much.
Setting up the Thunderbolts, I'm sure, because LaFontaine is going to.
Do you think that's where the Thunderbolts go? Is in that direction?
I just think it's going to be another point she's going to make of escalated threats, and we need to bring a team together. And that's my guess. But I don't know. That's a good point.
Right. But it's always.
You got Ironheart in there. I mean, you have that introduced. I just don't know, because this is apparently was the end of Phase 4.
It didn't feel like the end of a phase, but maybe that's what's the next movie. Is next movie Ant-Man and Wasp? Yeah, so it makes more sense of not necessarily this being the end of a phase, with that being the beginning of Phase 5 with Quantumania, which I'm so excited about.
I know, I'm so excited about. Yeah, it's great. But no, yeah, it was good. It was clearly, I mean, I still like Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness slightly better.
So I got a 5-tier ranking. Did you read my 5-tier ranking?
Did I read it?
Yeah. So tier 1 is you love it. It's a must see, and you'll watch it over and over. Tier 2, great. You'll see it more than once. Highly recommended. Tier 3, good. Not great. Hey, I'm glad I saw it, but I enjoyed it. Tier 4, not so good. I'm glad I saw it because it's part of the MCU. There were one or two good scenes. And tier 5, ugh, I don't really need to recommend. Tier 5, I put like a Morbius.
Yeah. So I'd put Thor, Love and Thunder in tier 4.
Okay.
And I would put this one in tier 2.
Okay. I agree with that. It's tier 2. I don't know that I'll watch this movie multiple times over and over, but I'll probably see it at least once or twice more.
I will.
As I'm revisiting MCU stuff over time. I don't have it as high as the original Black Panther.
Right.
I think it's I don't have it as high as the original Black Panther because of what you said. It's a little overstuffed It is. They could have trimmed out some of that and like made it a little tighter and trimmed out some of the like long extended underwater fighting scenes. I think that seemed to me to be like a giant like 10-minute, 15-minute distraction from the things I was really interested in.
The movie one could have ended with Queen Ramonda dying, think of it that way. And then the whole, but it just wasn't quite big enough for two movies. Like that's why they couldn't have done it. So that's why it was a 3-hour movie.
Right.
because they had to stuff so much in there. And that's the other thing with your rankings. It's like, am I looking at my watch? And it flew by for me.
Yeah.
The movie. I really didn't think it was that. I was like, oh, it's a 3-hour movie. And then I go in and I'm out. Like I was like, what? Like this is already done. It flew by for me, which that I put it almost in tier one. It's tier two, but it's at the top.
Yeah. I felt the same way because I saw it at Alamo where you got a whole half hour pre-show too.
Yeah.
Some of the Submariner cartoons from way back in the day.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was like an over 3-hour experience, but I didn't feel it at all.
They did a good job. The pacing was
all right. So that wraps up our discussion of Wakanda Forever. Let's get in a little bit into some of these comics we read, because I was like, hey, let's just take a peek at a couple comics. I hadn't read Namor wasn't ever one of my favorite characters. He's kind of a jerk. He's kind of a villain, kind of a hero. Jerk. Sometimes I don't even know people like he's an anti-hero. I'm like, is he or is he just a douche?
An arrogant like womanizer.
Right?
Yeah.
But I was like, let's take a look at a couple comics and see if I can get a different perspective on him. We read Uncanny X-Men #6. Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, smiling Stan Lee. Then we read Submariner Marvel Snapshots, which was much more recent, as part of a series Marvel did called Snapshots, where they did one issue per character. So let's start with the older book, X-Men #6. Does talk about Namor being a mutant. I didn't realize, like I said, I only heard about the mutant stuff from online outrage of people complaining about why is he a mutant? He's not a mutant. And then people are like, yes, he is a mutant. Shut up. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously here in like 1963, the X-Men and
the Brotherhood.
Magneto, the Brotherhood are trying to find him because like we got to get this powerful mutant to join our side to the other side. I forgot how much I love old X-Men comic books, by the way.
Yes. Yes. You're right. In July of 1964, he was a mutant. So be quiet, haters.
Right?
Before you were all born.
I could read these old X-Men comics forever. I'm glad that I got this Marvel Unlimited series because it opens with it seems like this is the second comic now. We read X-Men 4, which was the introduction of the Scarlet Witch. And this one also, that one I think starts with them having a birthday cake. And this one starts with them having pie. There's always something about baked goods in the Xavier school.
I know. What I thought about it, Joe, is I thought this was just a veiled attempt to have me read another comic with the Scarlet Witch in it. But I'm like, come on, Joe.
I didn't know the Scarlet Witch was in
it. You didn't. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think you genuinely didn't know that.
I didn't know until this comic that Namor had a huge crush, had a huge thing for the Scarlet Witch. I always just thought he had a thing for Sue Storm.
That's right. He's a womanizer, man.
There's a terrific moment in this comic where he does. He's like, she's the most beautiful woman I've seen, except for that other woman. I can't keep doing this. He's like, I can't keep falling for these bland women.
Yeah, I do love the old comics because they do take, which is fine, that you take a lot of liberties with their powers. Like, I didn't know Magneto could go into the astral plane.
I don't think he can. How does that work? He, like, projects his astral form due to...
No, it's a mental... all of his vast mental energy into an illusory figure of himself.
but an illusory figure of himself that he can see. It is basically astral projection. So...
It's astral protection. It is.
In this comic, it just starts with the X-Men and they're goofing around. Bobby is like making ice cream for his pie out of thin air. Cyclops, like Beast is reaching across the first page.
And he uses a concussive blast on him at the table for reaching without asking.
He's shooting his hand. He's like, don't reach for that sugar. And then Beast is like all mad. And like Iceman's like, well, no one's looking. I'll make some ice cream for my pie a la mode. I didn't know that his powers extended to making also flavored ice cream out of thin air.
Snowcone maker.
And then right before you can take a bite, Marvel Girl snatches it from him telekinetically and is like, don't eat with your fingers at the table. Professor X doesn't like that. Like, where is now? And then all of a sudden, Namor's on page 2 of the newspaper there. Where is Submariner? Coast Guard Patrol. Like, they're already looking for him. I forgot that he was such a menace.
Yes.
Like, because he goes way back to comics, like to
Fantastic Four.
Yeah, even before that, even. And it was like he was battling the original Human Torch, which we'll get into later.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why Magneto, if he's the master of magnetism, had to build a giant magnet on his island.
It's to enhance his power.
Yeah. And I don't know, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, they just seem more goofy than anything. But the plot of this, as it involves the character we intended to discuss, is that Magneto does create another image of himself that he can see and hear through to travel to the bottom of the ocean to go recruit Namor. And Xavier gets the hint that that's what Magneto's doing because he's trying to do the same thing.
Right.
And then, and it goes underwater and he's like, hey, wait, that's Magneto over there. He had the same idea I have. And Namor is just like screaming to himself in his throne room about how he just lost to the Fantastic Four.
So,
and quote, the girl I love has spurned me.
I think the most, I mean, there were a lot of odd things that you can attribute back to early comic day. For me, Joe, it was, you know, the I love the arrogance between Magneto and Namor of I need help from no man and all that kind of stuff. But the guy, his servant says, he's no mere human, my prince. He is a mutant, the same as you are. And his response is, I? A mutant? Why has that thought never occurred to me before? I'm like, what? So he didn't even know? He's like, I can fly. I have these wings on my feet. I have superhuman strength and I'm a god. He's like, so he didn't know he was a mutant? Why does this...
They didn't have testing for that back then. It's like everybody can see it but you, Namor. Everybody.
But then at the very next panel, it's the last time I took an ally, I regretted it, which is Avengers 3.
Right.
Submariner. He goes, but if Magneto is a fellow mutant, he really just kind of leaned into that mutant brotherhood quickly, didn't he?
Took it and ran with it. Oh, he was all about it. The X-Men don't have a Blackbird yet in this way back when. They're just sailing a pirate ship, kind of, to Magneto's island where they're going to capture him. And where, like, now you've got Namor underwater wearing a fur cape. Again, it's like not appropriate underwater attire. Just keep with the Speedo. And did you notice on the cover his swimming trunks there were red, not green? Apparently they were originally red and they changed green later.
I didn't know that. I didn't notice that. Maybe it was too red with him and Magneto on the same page. Do you like that? Submariner, this is my island. Silence. None speak in the presence of royalty.
I'm like a couple of arrogant.
Yelling at people all the time. It's not happy. And then for some reason, after his henchman convinces him that he should talk to Magneto, he gets in a submarine to sail there. I
know. With an S on it. I'm like, what? Like, what does that S mean?
Submariner. My name literally means someone who drives the submarine. Why, though?
And then Magneto wastes no time throwing, how about the flush trade? Here's Scarlet Witch.
I got something that'll change your mind about being on my side, buddy. And Quicksilver's, like, weirdly, like, he's opposed to it at first, and he's like, nah, all right. I didn't realize back then, like, how much the Scarlet Witch just kind of got, like, she just like had no agency at all. She's just kind of there.
Yep.
And like she's just a plot device. Like she can't control her powers. Like she moves her hand in a certain way and it unleashes a hex bolt by accident, which almost kills Namor.
Right.
But overall, Namor's portrayed in this book kind of the way I remember him. Angry, arrogant, talking to himself a lot, obsessed with surface women. The forbidden fruit for him.
All right.
And like he's fighting everybody. It's like he doesn't have a side. It doesn't matter. If you're in front of him, he's gonna punch you. That's it.
That's right.
His no time to waste on fools. Like Cyclops' blast don't do anything. Beast stands there and punches him in the chest for a while, like bongo drums. And he's just like ripping crap apart. And then at one point, he's able to lay on his back and punch the ground hard enough to cause an earthquake. I mean, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And it's all due to him. Apparently, he thought all of his powers were because he lived underwater for so long. But it's not. It's because he's a mutant.
Yeah.
And it ends with some dudes jumping and grabbing onto a rocket and holding it flies away.
And then you get the Scott Summers pinup at the end.
Who doesn't need a Scott?
Sincerely, Scott Summers.
I don't know. This is the Submariner I remember, though. And I always like reading these old books because they're a little corny. They're a little cheesy. But this has all of the things. And I think this carries through to how he acts a little bit. He's not this much, but he is always brooding. He's sitting in his throne room. He's mad. He's mad because he's not getting what he wants. And then somebody's like, you should be on my side. No, you should be on my side. He's like, I'm going to fight you all. I'm on my own side. I'm on the side
That's
of
right.
the side.
I'm my own side. That's
the
right.
only thing he didn't Green Lantern. Right. The only thing he didn't do in this book that is the total. If you're going to have a must have of every cliche of the Submariner, he didn't yell Imperious Rex at anybody.
He did.
Imperious Rex.
That's right.
Which is his catchphrase.
It is.
Which is Latin for Emperor King. Why does he shout that at people? I don't know. Like, literally, he's just shouting his job.
Right.
It's not a command. It's not a threat. It's a, I'm Emperor King. Fight me. All right. The other book we read was a little bit more serious. It was Marvel Snapshots, which was from just a few years ago, written by Alan Brannert, art by Jerry Ordway. This was a little different. And I what I enjoyed about this book is it tells you get to see the Submariner through someone else's eyes. And in this, I don't know how much of this is, I assume most of it's from back in the comics, but this is a woman who is dating Namor. It's got a thing for them surface women.
That's right.
Like, right after World War II, because I that was what I had forgotten, was that he was originally part of the team, the Invaders, with Captain America, who were fighting the Nazis in World War II.
Yes.
This is a little bit more of a touching story, where it's the woman that he's dating and her brothers come home from war. One's missing a leg, right? And the other one has PTSD. And they do, I think, they go to this side of Submariner that I forgot existed, which is, He's hanging out. He's just a dude. He's a superhero. And he is also somebody who fought the Nazis. He's just got like crazy. He sees a swastika at some point. And he's going to like wail on that dude.
Right.
Who also happens to be a robot shark. Even better. Anything in this book jump out to you about like Namor's character or the way he acts?
It actually, I mean, I think to your point about not really liking him, I just think they didn't know what to do with his backstory, and that's why I never liked him. I just didn't really know what he was about.
Yeah.
Like, what do you stand for? And you know, I don't. And if you're gonna be kind of a good guy, like if you're a bad guy, I get it. Like you're either Dr. Doom and you hate Reed Richards, or you're an evil guy, but he's not an evil guy. You know, Magneto, he's about, you know, mutants are superior and blah blah. He was kind of like Magneto, but a good guy sometimes. Yeah. And then he could never, and they just made him this kind of character that always fell in love with Sue Storm.
Right.
And so I just never, but this, my point is reading this book that you shared with me, I kind of got some like context to him, and I was like, oh, well, this kind of is interesting. He's got PTSD. He fought the Nazis. He's still the Namor that you and I remember, but different, like more deep almost.
Yeah.
So that was a pleasant surprise to me. They just never really, I don't ever them, and maybe it's just I haven't read enough about him because I never got into it, but I don't ever remember him having any kind of background like that before.
No, I didn't remember it either. And I think having read this and then watching the movie, this was closer to the movie in that it just makes you sort of think he's a dude with anger issues more than and I mean, in
traumatized as a kid. Right. Just like in this book, in the movie, and he's never going to forgive people.
In both instances, while there are different traumas, he's been traumatized, and he's going to take that out, and he's got this hard exterior shell that he's not going to let people pass very easily, and it causes him to act irrationally at times. Like in this book, it illustrates, it's like he does, people are afraid of him because he causes all of this destruction, and he's not really intending to cause all the destruction. He's just having a battle with a Nazi robot shark and is not aware of all of the damage he's causing and all the fear he's creating to the bystanders. And like, just the collateral damage means nothing to him. It's like, I got to beat the crap out of this thing. And if I have to destroy this entire amusement park in the process, I'm not even paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Because this person represents evil. And I thought that was a real good message in there. Cause the guy, a weird little dude inside the thing, but he's like, I was just hired by the Nazis. And he's like, you think that makes you not culpable? Like, I love that line in there. Cause it's the slow like path to justifying your actions. Well, I'm not actually a Nazi. I'm just getting paid by the Nazis.
Right. And he's following like,
doesn't matter. Like, yeah, you can't, that's not an excuse. And I love that message. Cause that's about, you know, you got to stand for something. You can't just say, well, they're the bad guys, I'm just doing their dirty work.
Right.
Like, what? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You can't, you're still the bad guy then. I got to ask you, Joe, did you know the Wizard was going to be in here?
I did not know the Wizard was going to be in here.
The Wizard
is one of my favorite of all time.
Wizard.
The Wizard for a while. Well, actually, the Wizard is the adopted dad of the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
It's like these Scarlet Witch tie-ins are just
She's more of an important character in the Marvel universe than most people realize. She's connected. She's like the Kevin Wizard. Bacon.
Oh, and the Wizard was in it. I'm like, Joe, did you know the Wizard was in here? Scarlet Witch. I think there were just random appearances you didn't know about. I'm impressed though.
No, I didn't. It's because you remember I picked a different book at first, and this was my sub.
As you say, yeah. But the Wizard's in it, and he has to save the dude from Namor killing him. He's like, I'm gonna kill you. He's like, no, I'm saving you. I'm the Wiz. Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was a good book. And
why is the Wizard's costume yellow?
I think you know the answer to that.
That way it doesn't show.
Yeah. That was good. Those were both good choices.
I'm glad you liked them. I'm still not convinced that I love Namor as a character and would read a lot of Namor books. I came across a lot of recommendations for, hey, I would love to talk to somebody who really likes Namor as a character and is like, if you really want to read what's here, read this thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's a little all over the board, especially in the comics. The trauma is different. Like sometimes, like this book, they just bring in, yeah, he fought the Nazis in World War II. It's like, oh crap, I forgot that was even a thing. Or, right. Oh my gosh, yeah, he, you know, is a mutant. Oh my gosh, I've totally forgot that was a thing too. So it's almost like nothing in my mind sticks to him except that personality and just the weird quirks and not the character that I can get my arms around. Because even in these, you know, between this and the movie, yes, he's driven and he's not aware of his surroundings. He's got anger issues and there's trauma in his past, but it's so fungible in the comics what that is. Like, yeah. I can't nail it down.
And in the movie, I know we already talked about it, but it kind of reminds you of this too. You got to remember he had all these issues you talk about in the MCU, but he never like used that aggression for what, hundreds of years,
right?
I mean, he didn't go out seeking violence,
right?
He just was ready for it when he knew it was inevitably going to happen again. Like, he didn't go back and, as far as we know, attack the Mayans or the Haitians or anybody like that. He just waited. Right. But then when he felt threatened, he exerted with extreme prejudice.
Right.
And it's like, is that wrong? I mean, if you really, that's the interesting moral dilemma here. It's like, they attacked his home.
Right.
Like, they were coming after his home. He laid in wait, in peaceful wait for centuries, seems like. So what is the real wrong thing in here? It's like, well, but how he went about it was wrong. Okay, yeah, that's true. But if you think about it, Joe, he wasn't overly violent.
Oh, he just said, I just want to kill one person. I mean, that was his whole thing. I just want to kill this one person, then we'll all be good.
Yes. Yeah. And you knew that wasn't going to happen. You know, that's the whole thing. It's like, yeah, that's not going to stop you. But
right. Well, yeah. And M'Baku said it at one point. He's like, you know, what's to stop him from making another demand after that then? And another
right. one. Exactly. That's very, very good. Very good. That's why he's a great leader.
But I think to wrap up that summarizes it is that I have had trouble getting my arms around the comic character, and I still do. but I think that the way they presented it in the MCU is way more compelling than the way he's been presented in comics that I've read so far. So
yeah,
it's almost like that, you know, we went on an exploratory journey to say, if you liked Namor in the movie, would you like him in the comics? And I don't think we found a comic yet that you'd be like, yeah, if you like him in the movies, go check this comic out. But I will keep my eye open and I'm open to suggestion.
Yeah.
All right, Mark. Well, this was awesome as always.
It was great.
Quantumania coming soon.
Marvel. We'll have to talk about the holiday special next.
Holiday Joe. Special. If we have time to squeeze in one more podcast before Christmas, I also have some Christmas related Spider-Man comics that we can go through. I pulled the top 10 Marvel Christmas issues. So maybe we can take a look at that.
Very nice.
But until next time, thanks for joining me, Mark, and cheers.
Cheers, Joe. Thank you for having me.
All right.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter, @CasualComicsGuy. At our blog, CasualComicsGuy.com. Or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.